The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. If you'd like to email the show, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Later on in the program, we will finally get to a few of those responses that have been coming in from our wonderful listeners out there spread over all the earth. We'll come back to that, as I say, toward the end of the show, and also give you a few more stats and figures about the work here at Edstone. I'd like to start the show by quoting from a Spectator piece, Donald Trump's Angry America, it's titled. After the disappointment of Barack Obama, the country, it says in the subhead, is turning mean. That's what's happening to the United States. At least that's how this one Brit views what's happening in America right now. And while there are some interesting points made in the piece, what always stands out in stories like this is how God is just not even in the picture at all. And it's not that I go into these pieces expecting to find him there, but there's just an ignorance of what's happening in the world and what's happening to our nations. And God's out of the picture entirely. And this particular commentator, he does his best. He has a pretty good understanding of history. He does his best to explain and even praises America's power and might and how generous America has been to the rest of the world. But he doesn't understand, of course, the source of those many abundant blessings, the source of all that power. I brought up recently those verses in Job 38, where, as God said there to this master builder, this one of the greatest men of his generation, God said to Job, "Who is it that darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" He didn't even have knowledge, Job did. He had plenty of materialistic knowledge, but he didn't have the revealed truth of God. He didn't have God's knowledge. And God says there, and also over in Hosea 4, that's what he says about our people today. We're being destroyed for lack of knowledge. We've rejected the true knowledge of God. And so God's rejecting us. As I say, that's what's missing from all of these accounts. He writes here, I failed to even write down the name of the commentator, but it's from The Spectator. And as I say, it's one Britain's view of the United States. It's easy to forget that the relative peace and prosperity that we've enjoyed since the Second World War has been underpinned by America's stability and its might, both economic and military. I mean, that's true. That's true. Pax Americana. It's easy to forget that the global order was maintained by a powerful United States, both economically and militarily. It says that may sound like neocon twaddle, but it's true. America's generous attitude to globalization has helped us all become richer. The manufacturing boom in Asia and Latin America, for instance, came at the expense of American jobs, but America accepted it. While European governments have steadily slashed their armies to pieces, U.S. military spending now makes up 73% of NATO's total spend. There's no such thing as a free world, really. Uncle Sam always picks up the tab. As John F. Kennedy said, the cost of freedom is always high, but Americans have always paid it. Mr. Trump would say that sounds like a bum deal. And I think he's on to some things there. I think Americans do see jobs leaving. They see immigrants streaming across the border. And they're clamoring for a leader that will put America first. This piece says, America's sense of manifest destiny, the belief that the nation had been divinely appointed to redeem mankind, is always annoying and sometimes destructive, he says. It's led to big mistakes in Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq. America can be hypocritical and self-righteous, but better than not righteous at all. And when you think about how overbearing America could be, notice this point in particular. When you think about how overbearing America could be, given all the power at her disposal, it's remarkable how restrained she has been. America has always tried to do the right thing. And so here's an author who understands the significance of American power and how it has maintained, for the most part, a global order since the end of World War II. But he doesn't see that all of those blessings were poured down upon us because of what God promised to Abraham anciently. Now, you look at, of course, just the much, much shorter history of America. We pointed out last week or the week before when we were going through some of the stories about Scalia's death and the rule of law. We mentioned that Paul Johnson quote, that famous British historian Paul Johnson, from his piece back in 1999, where he said America was an experiment designed to establish the rule of God on earth. These were pious individuals that God used to establish this nation, the descendants of Manasseh, biblically. And they came along and wanted to establish the rule of God on earth. I mean, you know some of this history. We've gone through it before. How the Bible certainly served as a foundation. What a goal these founders had. My father, by the way, has an old article. It's featured today at the Trumpet, Our Forefathers' Goal. He actually refers to that Paul Johnson quote that I just mentioned there. But let me just switch back to this Spectator piece where it says, in return for this service to mankind, what thanks does the indispensable nation get? Europeans sneer at America's patriotism, its gun laws, and the coarseness of its consumer culture. We titter at the stupidity of American Christians. So he balances some of the praise with some zingers. We titter at the stupidity of American Christians while Islamic governments call the U.S. the great Satan. Can anyone blame the American lower middle classes whose wages have stagnated while the world blossomed under Pax Americana for feeling resentful? They feel America's generosity has been exploited, and that with the rise of China and their failures in the Middle East, their country is losing. In Donald Trump, they have found someone who won't let them be pushed around anymore. He says here the term fascist is overused, but it fits Trump nicely. Well, so he believes. And not just because on Sunday he retweeted a Mussolini quote and failed to distance himself from the Ku Klux Klan. It says Trump exhibits the major characteristics of the worst dictators. He prefers national socialism to free enterprise. His economic policies, and as much as they make any sense at all, are protectionist. Although he professes himself to be Presbyterian, he's practically amoral. He exudes machismo in a strangely camp manner, and he's savage toward those who stand in his way. He says here, finally, a key aspect to Trump's success is that he cuts through the pious baloney about America being a shining city on a hill. His foreign policy has nothing to do with being good. It's all about winning. It's all about winning. So, I mean, he doesn't, this writer doesn't exactly subscribe to the shining city on a hill, baloney as he calls it. But now it's the other extreme, I guess. The fascist. The dictator. Now again, you go back to what God says, what he promised to Abraham. And that's what we have to keep viewing all of these events from. I mean, that's the window that we have to look through. The United States and Britain in prophecy. That book Mr. Armstrong wrote that went all over the world to millions and millions of people. And as he explains in there, in modern history, in particular the past two centuries, two nations have dominated the news. Britain and America. Great Britain, the British Empire, and the United States of America. And of course, students of God's Word understand that this is the case. It has been the case because of the promises made to Abraham that were to be passed on down through to the tribes of Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh. Let me just read a few verses to you from the blessings and cursings chapters. That would be Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. Let me start in Deuteronomy 28. It says, "And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Lord your God will set you on high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come on you and overtake you, if you shall hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God." It's not so bad to look to God, to hearken to his commandments, to set out to be a shining example to the world. It's certainly not pious baloney. He says in verse 8, this is Deuteronomy 28, "The Lord shall command the blessing upon you and your storehouses, and in all that you set your hand to do, and he shall bless you in the land which the Eternal your God gives you." God blessed our peoples. And here again, it wasn't even because of what the founders did, but he certainly used them and established the nation on that rule of law based on the Bible. And that's how we've been able to hold on to those blessings for as long as we have. But now we see so many of them taken away. Curses are setting in. And that's really an underlying theme to what we see happening in the United States today as well. The desperation that's there. They may not express it as such, the average American. Well, these are curses. But they know things are going wrong. And so when someone comes along and confidently says, "I'm going to make it right. We're going to make America great again." You could see why so many people would want that. But no man is going to bring that about. It says, "The Eternal shall open unto you his good treasure and heaven to give the rain unto the land in his season and to bless all the work of your hand. And you shall lend unto many nations and you shall not borrow." I mean, who did that historically? Now we're borrowing. We're borrowing at unprecedented levels. But what nation was it? When you look back over our modern history, over the last two centuries, what nation was it that was there to lend a helping hand to so many other nations? Verse 15, it says, "But it shall come to pass, if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you this day, that all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the field. Cursed shall be your basket and your store." I mean, look, this has been a lesson of history. Look at what happened to ancient Israel. Look at what happened to the kingdom of Judah. And now look at what's happening to our peoples. Well, if this commentator at The Spectator would even look at what happened to his own people, the British Empire. I mean, man just can't conceive of a God who would actually send curses. But look at what God's word says. Read Deuteronomy 28. Read Leviticus 26. That's God talking. In Leviticus, it says, "But if you will not hearken unto me, and will not do all these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhor my judgments, so that you will not do all my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning ague, and shall consume the eyes, and cause sorrow of heart. And you shall sow your seed in vain, and your enemies shall eat it." Let me explain it from the United States and Britain in prophecy. And again, we're having to just briefly summarize some of the key points made in that book. But all these blessings poured upon us from heaven above, from God's throne, because of Abraham's obedience, because of the promise God made to Abraham. Here's what Herbert Armstrong says. "But after God had withheld the birthright 2,520 years, and then when our peoples deserved nothing from God, he suddenly bestowed on us national blessings unparalleled in history. The unconditional promise to Abraham was kept." God kept his promise. He made them in Genesis 12. He repeated them in the chapters that follow Genesis 12. Over and over again. Now, either followed through and on those promises, or God is a liar. I hope if you don't have a copy, if you haven't read it yet, that you'll get the United States and Britain in prophecy. It'll unlock a third of the Bible to your understanding. You'll be able to understand large sections of Scripture that would have made no sense previously. It really is the master key to understanding prophecy. Verse 17, this is in Leviticus 26, "And I will set my face against you, and you shall be slain before your enemies. They that hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when none pursue you. And if you will not yet for all this hearken unto me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins." And Mr. Armstrong, in his book, he explains the meaning there about the punishment, about the withholding of the birthright promises for 2,520 years. And then all of a sudden, there in the early 1800s, God bestowed on us national blessings unparalleled in history, as you had the great British Empire. The sun never set on that empire when it was at its peak. And then that smooth transition as the sun was beginning to set on that empire. The smooth transition over to the single greatest superpower in history. 2 centuries. These two nations, these two peoples have dominated the news. They've dominated modern history. But that's now suddenly and dramatically changing for the worse. Mr. Armstrong says that once God followed through on that unconditional promise, he then says, no longer then is God obligated by his promise to continue our undeserving peoples in world prestige, wealth, and greatness. See, God's kept his promise. And Mr. Armstrong says here, once we had been given such unrivaled position, it was up to us whether we should keep it. And so that's where, when you talk about undermining law and updating or modernizing the Constitution or making exceptions to the rule of law, that's why it's so dangerous. It's revealing to take a shot at the so-called pious baloney of being an example nation, a model nation, a nation of freedom because there's the rule of law. It's very revealing, isn't it? God's no longer obligated to continue pouring those blessings down upon us. It's up to us now to keep them. And our peoples are getting very concerned and worried because they see so much slipping away. Look at the history. Again, you don't have to go very far back, as I said. It's just the past two centuries or so. The glory days of empire, the ridiculous wealth that global trade brought in to Great Britain. The sun never set on the empire, as I said. And yet look at how that picture dramatically changed over the course of just two or three decades. Two world wars that bled Britain of its finest men and so much of its unbelievable wealth. They came out of that practically bankrupt, unable to sustain all of the operating costs of empire. And so they started to sell it off and let it go. But as I say, the transition from that empire to the superpower, it was a smooth one. I mean, these are brothers. These are brothers, and America rose to its height in power and prominence and wealth and prosperity just a little while after the empire did. And that continued for a period of what? A few more decades? But now look at where we are today. Verse 19, "And I will break the pride of your power, and I'll make your heaven iron and your earth as brass." The pride of our power has been broken. Now, Mr. Armstrong was writing about this passage. I mean, the first version of the United States and Britain in prophecy, it came out in the 1930s and 40s. The book that we know it to be today, that would have been 1960s, I guess. Notice what he wrote. "Do you think so great a fall could not come to so great powers as Britain and America? Do you say it can't happen here? Do you think the great God who was able to give them such unprecedented world leadership and power and wealth is not able to take it away from them and throw them, like their ancient forefathers, back into slavery?" He said, "You need to open your eyes to the fact that Britain's sun already has set. You need to wake up to the fact that the United States, even still possessing unmatched power, is afraid, fears to use it. Just as God said, I'll break the pride of your power." That the United States has stopped winning wars. That America was unable, with all its vast power, to conquer little North Vietnam. You can see about when he was writing this. After that miserable effort in Vietnam, look at what's happened now more recently. Whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria or Libya, everywhere we go. He says, "The United States is fast riding to the greatest fall that ever befell any nation." The handwriting is on the wall. That's why we're seeing such incredibly unusual election cycles. That's why you're seeing so many people willing to pin their hopes on someone that just talks tough that talks confidently, that says he's going to bring back the glory days, that says it's going to be like the presidency of Reagan, or maybe before that, JFK or FDR. Make America great again. Only God can do that. God will do that. God's going to make Britain great again. Verse 20, it says, "And your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield her increase, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruits." Strength being spent in vain. That's what we've seen in the Middle East. That's what we've seen everywhere that America has been. All of that power, that prosperity, that wealth, it's just all been spent in vain. Mr. Armstrong, again, this is from the United States and Britain in prophecy. He says there's a reason. It's bound up with history and divine promises pertaining to Israel. See, there's a reason. If you're willing to get into the Bible, Bible history, Bible prophecy, then you can know what's coming. You can know what's ahead. You can know what America and Britain are going to have to go through before they ever are great again. How is God going to make America great again? He's got a very different plan than Mr. Trump. How is God going to make Great Britain great again? It says here, this is Mr. Armstrong, "The American nation is slated to go down even more suddenly than Great Britain, to utter ignominy and loss of all national wealth, greatness, and power." See, what's going to happen when, to play along, assuming Mr. Trump gets in there, and there's no guarantee that he will, only God knows. But if he gets in there, what will happen to people? What will people think when he doesn't follow through on his promises, when he can't deliver? We've seen it play out before, as I said, with respect to 2008. All the grandiose promises, all of the assurances, all of the confident talk. We're going to fix all the problems in this world. That was a theme in 2008. Well, now the world is in turmoil and chaos. And so here comes another smooth talker. Well, okay, we're going to fix everything that's wrong in America. Let's do that. When will our people wake to the fact that it's not working? This is the lesson God's trying to teach us. Mr. Armstrong called it aversion therapy. He's letting it run its course so that we'll finally come to a point where we go to God and say, "You know what? We didn't have the knowledge. We didn't know. We left you out of the picture. We didn't obey your laws, and thus we lost all of those blessings that were poured down upon us. We lost everything." It's going to teach a valuable lesson that will finally stick with our people. And then, looking ahead into the wonderful world tomorrow, you can foresee the time when he will make our peoples great again. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond. The live stream's available at the trumpet.com website and also at kpcg.fm. Keep sending us that feedback. Send your emails to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The very best minds in the world are in total ignorance of the unprecedented cataclysm that is about to strike. And why have these prophecies not been understood or believed? Because the vital key that unlocks prophecy to our understanding had been lost. That key is the identity of the United States and the British peoples in biblical prophecy. That key has been found. It is presented to those whose unprejudiced eyes are willing to see in this volume, the United States and Britain in prophecy. The events prophesied to strike the American and British peoples in the next few years are sure. These colossal world events, shrinking the first two world wars into insignificance, will come, but not until the warning has been made available for those whose eyes are willing to see. Request the United States and Britain in Prophecy today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, the United States isn't the only place on earth where politics and elections are in the news. This piece here from the Jerusalem Post, again, kind of a sad commentary on the state of the world today. It's the election in Ireland, the Irish election, more trouble for Israel. In the Emerald Isle, it says it may take weeks to sort out the recent Irish election and crown a new government in Dublin. But one thing is already certain, Israel's position in the Emerald Isle is about to go from bad to worse. Though it is not clear whether the ruling Fine Gael, I guess is how you say it, will form a coalition together with its bitter political rival, Fianna Fáil, or whether Fine Gael will form a minority government, it is clear that pro-Israel candidates were roundly defeated across the board, while pro-Palestinian candidates enjoyed a good day Friday at the polls. For instance, Fine Gael's Alan Shatter, the sole Jewish MP who served from 2011 to 2014 as both justice and defense minister, and who has been the victim of anti-Semitic swipes for his willingness to speak up for Israel, was defeated. On the other hand, new MP Gino Kinney from the Anti-Austerity Alliance celebrated his election victory on Saturday by waving a Palestinian flag. Imagine that. He's in Ireland. He won an election in Ireland, and he's waving the Palestinian flag. There's a lot of hatred and animosity in Ireland toward Israel. And that's something that we'll want to follow and watch. It is significant. I mean, it's building up all over Europe, of course. And we know about some of the attacks in France and elsewhere. But there's a lot of animosity right there in the Emerald Isle, as it says in that title. Why is it? Why is there so much hatred for Jews in Europe? Why is there so much hatred for Jews around the world? Well, there's a spirit behind it, as we've discussed before. Satan really hates spiritual Jews. That's what true Christians are. And he hates the Jewish people, the physical race as well. And this, too, is building to more violence and destruction. And as you know, I mean, Jerusalem is like the powder keg that triggers all of these worldwide events of calamity and desolation. It leads right into global war. Well, speaking of Europe, this other piece here, it's from Spiegel. It's an interview Spiegel had with what's his first name? Seehofer. Horst, I think it is. In any event, the title has "The Country is Divided." That's Seehofer's take on Germany because of the refugee crisis. Spiegel asked him why he was so irritable. And he said, "I find it absurd that I'm constantly having to justify myself for standing up for law and order. I'm constantly being attacked in the media. Among the general public, I have very high approval ratings for my position, even phenomenal ratings in Bavaria, whereas the approval ratings for the SPD are at rock bottom." So later on in this exchange, Spiegel says, "If Merkel runs for re-election, will your party support her if she stays true to her refugee policies?" And Seehofer said, "Next question, please." He didn't want to answer that, implying that the support may not be there at all. If she goes for re-election, if she continues with the current refugee policy. Later in the interview, he said, "The country is divided. People are unsettled, and polarization has increased. Europe is stressed and disunited. Every politician should be alarmed. I am, at least. What's happening in Saxony is unacceptable, there's no question, but we also have to ask ourselves if political leaders can do something so that the radicalization begins to wane again. There's division in Germany. There's division in Europe. The anti-migrant sentiment, it's on the rise." He mentioned Saxony in particular. This piece here, also from Spiegel. It's last week, February 25th. It says, "Recently, the state's image has become even darker." This is talking about Saxony. You can look at a map of Germany. It's close to Bavaria. It borders, I think, with Czechoslovakia there toward the south. But it says, "Last Thursday evening, an angry mob chanting, 'We are the people,' blocked a bus full of refugees from pulling into an initial reception facility in the city of Klausnitz, near Saxony's border with the Czech Republic. The resulting video, which clearly shows the fear of the refugees inside the bus, some of them children, quickly spread around the country and beyond. Then on Saturday night, a planned refugee hostel in the Saxon city of Botzen, just east of Dresden, went up in flames in what police are now calling an arson attack. Some onlookers attempted to prevent the fire department from extinguishing the blaze and demonstrated their undisguised pleasure that the building was on fire and that asylum seekers likely won't be able to move in very soon." It says, Spiegel writes here, "The state's image has suffered tremendously as a result of such blatant racism, and the negative effects of its economy have become noticeable. Tourists are staying away, and scientists from abroad are canceling planned visits to Saxon research institutes and universities, not wanting to spend time in Pegida's homeland." This is where that far right-wing party was established, right there around Dresden. It says the xenophobic demonstrations are destroying Dresden's image in the world, complains Christian Thielmann, principal conductor at some institute that I can't pronounce here, the orchestra. He says he'd like to see a ban on demonstrations in the city center. That's in the divided nation of Germany. There's troubles everywhere in the world, aren't there? The Germans are crying out for a leader, a strong man. As we covered earlier this week, file, by the way, I think has been played now more than 1,100 times, the one we posted on Monday. They're crying out for a strong man. The nation is divided. So many people are just absolutely angry and upset over the refugee crisis. I thought this piece was really interesting. It's from the Los Angeles Times, but it has to do with what's happening there in Germany. And again, it just highlights how tense the situation is, and how Germany is becoming more and more, well, not the accommodating nation that many of the refugees thought going in. The Times writes, "After more than 1.1 million refugees from troubled lands such as Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan have trekked into Germany over the last 13 months, a small but growing number are heading home." How about that? Why would they go all the way to Germany and then arrive in places like Dresden and then decide, you know what? I'm going back to Syria. I think I'll go back to Afghanistan. It says the reasons are myriad, but include overcrowded refugee centers, exasperating bureaucracy, unfamiliar German food. I don't think that's a real factor. Lack of jobs. And then this, a spreading sense of resentment from Germans who fear their country is being overrun by Muslims. That's the real reason, or certainly the main reason. The spreading sense of resentment coming from Germans who fear their country's being overrun. And so a small but growing number of refugees are turning around and going home. It says later, many refugees say they are now happy to trade a cold, heartless, and lonely life in one of Europe's richest countries for the violence, insecurity, and poverty back home. And they say they've realized, rather belatedly, that smugglers had sold them a pack of lies about big houses, well-paying jobs, and the life of luxury they would find in Germany. Well, I suppose there are other factors for some. Everyone's different. But you can see where this is building as well. And then this last piece here, which again relates to the crisis. This one's about Putin from the Times here in London. It says NATO has accused President Putin of weaponizing the migrant crisis in an effort to push Europe to the brink of collapse. Why would Putin do this? Why would Russia behave this way? This is not criticism coming from a commentator. This is NATO accusing President Putin of manipulating the migrant crisis in order to bring Europe down, in order to make Europe weaker. Who is going to stand up to Putin? Who's going to fight back against Russia? There's going to be a strong man eventually to rally the Germans, to unify Germany, to unify a smaller European Union. 10 kingdoms, 10 kings, as it says in Daniel 2 and Revelation 17. This article says, as Britain was told to pay £63 million to help Greece cope with soaring numbers of trapped incomers, Russia and Syria were blamed for intensifying the tension between allies. Together, Russia and the Assad regime are deliberately weaponizing migration in an attempt to overwhelm European structures and break European resolve. That's according to General Philippe Breedlove, or Philip if he's not French, and the NATO's top commander in Europe. It says Russia's actions in Syria wildly exacerbated the problem. He told a Senate committee in Washington, the Syrian regime's use of barrel bombs against civilians was terrorizing people to get them on the road and to make them a problem for other countries. Let me just repeat that. Syria's use of barrel bombs against civilians was terrorizing people to get them on the road, he said. This is his testimony before Congress in Washington, before a Senate committee in Washington. They're trying to make them hit the road because they know it's bringing Europe down. It says the refugee issue caused tempers to flare between EU leaders yesterday, with the Austrian chancellor defending its cap on migrants by declaring that Austria is not a waiting room for Germany and attacking Angela Merkel for her chaotic approach to asylum seekers. I mean, it's just they're all against all. You can see it breaking down. You can see that dramatic changes are going to be made. Everything's pointing to this. The aggression coming from the East, from Russia, the internal division, the division within Germany, the lack of leadership, the lack of border security, the tremendous cost of this crisis. What happens if Britain exits? I was going through an old program from my father. This is from, I think, 2011. And we'll play clips from this program perhaps next week. Certainly, as we draw closer to that referendum in June. But what happens once Britain is finally on the outside? Then think about just how much faster those 10 kingdoms are going to coalesce together, having one mind. Finally, they'll be unified. They'll have a singular purpose. They'll unite around the strong man. And then everything will be set for so many other prophecies to be fulfilled. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show once again on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, our headquarters campus. When we come back, we'll update you on a few facts and figures regarding the work and also give you some listener feedback. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
2 weeks ago, we played the UK program, the Key of David UK, the War of the Churches, here in the UK region, and I mentioned how many responses that generated. With the trickle-in that followed, it ended up being 226 total requests for the book, The True History of God's True Church, and that turns out to be our second highest response ever for the program. And it was a repeat program that, as I say, just played a couple of weeks ago. So far this year, I think we've had 9 weekends. The average weekly response has been 147. We had a couple, 2 or 3 there in a row, I think, that were a little lower, 110, 115. But taken together with some of these other bigger responses, the average, as it's spread out over 9 weeks, has been 147. You compare that with some of those initial numbers we were getting at the start of last year, 20, 30, maybe 40 responses if it was pretty solid. And so to be averaging 147, that's exciting. It's definitely going in the right direction. This week's program, by the way, we pulled together some of the material from those two programs, those two radio programs that we did a couple of weeks ago following Antonin Scalia's death. But the title of this show is America and the Rule of Law. America and the Rule of Law. And this will be the first video in which we offer America Under Attack and also No Freedom Without Law, two excellent booklets. And both of those booklets will be offered for the first time on television over here. And if you know anything about the work at headquarters and with my father's programs and the distribution of literature from the headquarters facility, America Under Attack for the last couple of years has been our most popular booklet. So we'll certainly look forward to some big numbers from this weekend as well. Next week's program, we've already taped that. On Tuesday. That's titled The Crisis at the Close. And here again, on that one, let's see, what was the literature? Oh, he was right. He was right. And I believe this is the first time that we'll be offering that particular booklet as well. So lots of new literature going out. We've just kind of been waiting for some of these pieces of literature that I've been wanting to advertise, but I've just, I guess, been waiting for the right subject to come along. To be able to present this. So hopefully you'll get some exciting news back from me on a program next week and perhaps the week after that. All right, a few emails. These come from you listeners from all over the world. This one here, the first one, awesome program today. I was able to listen live, and I was speechless. In preparation for the kingdom of God, we are honored with a tremendous privilege of learning and growing in the true knowledge of Christ's gospel. It says, having the opportunity to support his work, first and foremost. Thank you for all that you're doing to get the message out to this world as the time of Christ's second coming draws near. What a great honor and privilege it is to serve our God. That comes just earlier this week, I believe it was. The second one here says, I feel the same way about your assessment of the current political scene. This in response to the two programs we've had the last couple of days, I think the one on Tuesday in particular. These kinds of leaders who are running for the U.S. 2016 elections are described very accurately by Isaiah verses 3 through 12. In addition, you can see that the God of this world is having great influence on these candidates. In addition, you can clearly see from the quality of the candidates that the Leviticus 26 punishments listed for unfaithful modern-day Israel are in effect. He says, I truly pray every day for your great work. This next one here, coming in response to not just this show, but all of the programming that we make available on kpcg.fm. We thoroughly enjoy all of your TV and audios. They prove without a doubt that we are studying with the church that Jesus established. We anxiously wait each day for your program. The Trumpet Hour is an added bonus. Of course, the Key of David programs are also a highlight of our week. Live by Every Word with Brian Davis really is so interesting and helpful. We listen and re-listen, look up the scriptures. I take notes, and it's wonderful to reinforce that with what we study. He says, we feel like we know each one of you personally. So a nice comment there. A lot of these didn't have the location. Don't forget to send that in, as I think our listeners are always excited to hear where you come from. This one here, in response to your comment regarding 2 Timothy 3:1, you can talk about this chapter and verse every broadcast. It's very important in today's world. If you recall, I mentioned that it seems like I keep going back to 2 Timothy 3, what Paul said about what will be in the last days, describing the dangerous times that we're living in today. And as this listener brings out, you could bring it up every broadcast, and it would be totally applicable. This one here, I totally agree with your assessment of our obsession with amusement and entertainment. How far we have fallen from teaching our children about God and the responsibilities that we each have toward Him in building right character. Thank you for your kind rebuke. You have made thinking seriously about, or you have me thinking seriously about what really matters. I'm in Virginia, this listener says. Keep up the good work. So that comes to us from the East Coast there in the United States. This one here from Illinois. Thank you for today's informative and useful program. Especially enjoyed the audio clips of Mr. Armstrong talking about television and the paradox of technology. May we all be stirred to draw closer to God, think more deeply, and not be so shallow. Keep on telling it like it is. Our prayers are with you all over there in England. And then finally, this last one, it says, just a word of thanks for all that you do. It's an honor to have all this internet access to God's work. I've been a co-worker with God's church since the days of Mr. Armstrong. That has proven to be the best decision that I've made in my life. My prayers and continued support are always with this work. God bless each and every one of you. So if you, like so many of these I've just read to you, if you'd like to send us your comments, just send that email to td@kpcg.fm. I say it so much, you have it memorized by now. So send us a quick note. Tell us who you are. Tell us where you're writing from or where you're listening from. And if you'd like, you can also put in there how you listen to the program as well, as there are numerous ways that you can listen to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Well, thank you for joining us today. There's only one more day left in the week. So we'll look forward to continuing our conversation with you tomorrow.